guess so, Chris. Here we go again.
I ask Doc, hey, Doc, how you doing?
All right.
Well, welcome, everyone, to the Campfire Show.
Yes.
Right. Yes. We're back.
Yeah. You know, actually, one reason I'm a little... I'm on something like now, I think, my 12th day in a row at the AMP.
Really?
So, yeah. We had some people... Well, some people retired. Then my dairy manager went on vacation, oddly enough, to where our guest lives, went out to Vegas.
Ooh.
He's back tomorrow, but my dairy manager, but I've been basically holding down the doggone fort, and I'll tell you, I got many an arrow in my back. I am mighty weary.
You need a massage or something?
No, I don't. I just need to get some doggone sleep. It's, you know, I get up at about 4:30 to do the dairy section, 4:30, 5:30, and sleeping in is 5:30, and then it's 8 hours or so at, you know, lugging milk, and then it's then I go home and I do a show, then I do my promotion work for the station. And then, I don't know, I pass my wife in the, like, ships in the night and walk the dog and go to bed. And next thing I know, the darn alarm's ringing again. So, yeah, I'm a little weary.
Someone's going to have to make a documentary film about your life, Doc.
It wouldn't be very interesting, trust me. Even, no, I don't think it'd be much of anything. It'd be about as boring as it gets.
Well, I want to just tell folks your website.
Yeah, go ahead.
DocSouth.net.
Yeah.
DocSouth.net. You got a lot of information up there about your shows.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you're starting to podcast a lot of stuff. There's so much to browse around there. And if you ever just go there and click on the spinning record, that's how you hear the station.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like an on-off button for a radio that you can't work the dial. Thank heaven. So let's get our guest on. We spoke with this fellow's wife, what, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Diane Renee, Navy Blue.
Yep.
And, she's got herself a wonderful husband, from what I can gather, from what she said, and what from other people tell me, and what I've read, and his information about his life and stuff. We got ourselves one nice guest lined up here.
Yeah.
It's Chris Egan. Chris, you there?
Yes, I am, Doc.
Okay, now this is going to be a little tough because you're Chris and my co-host here is Chris, so I don't know how we're going to work this out, but mostly I'll be talking to you. Chris just knows to chime in.
Yeah.
Or this Chris. Jersey Chris. Okay, there you go. You're Vegas Chris and Jersey Chris. Okay.
Or he can just be Chris.
Okay, that'll work. Now, Vegas Chris, have you always been in Vegas? Is that your, like, hometown?
Yes, I was born in Las Vegas in 1957, and I grew up in Vegas and been here most of my life.
Wow!
And it was a great town to grow up, and I grew up three brothers and myself and a great mom and dad.
So, all in all, it's not necessarily what you would think of the Vegas lifestyle, you know, but they, you always figure it's nothing but the Rat Pack running around. But, no, it'd be obvious. There'd be all sorts of families around and stuff, people working hard in the casino trade or the hotels or, I guess, any kind. It's a city. There's all sorts of work. What did your dad do?
Well, my father was a musician, still is, a pianist, and he played years back for a lot of different acts, for like Count Basie, Sammy Davis, and a lot of good jazz groups in Vegas. And he still does play now that he's up in years, but he had some great bands. And that's where I kind of got into music myself.
Didn't Count Basie play piano, too?
Yeah, when he would be in Vegas, he would have to conduct the band, and then my dad would take the chair and play piano.
Okay. Okay, and, yeah, because, boy, so he was good enough to match, oh, my gosh, Count Basie?
Yeah. He, as a kid growing up, seeing these people, meeting them, it wasn't a big deal. They would be over the house, but
yeah,
they were just older people, and that knew my parents, you know.
Yeah. So you're sitting there, you could be, playing with your model cars, and there's Count Basie. You're running around under the table. He's talking with your dad and mom. Wow.
Correct. Yeah.
Cool.
And Lee Greenwood, when I was, my dad groomed Lee Greenwood when he was 17 years old. Lee would be over the house every day taking vocal lessons. And even Wayne Newton was a neighbor of ours, and a man called Jimmy Hassel, who used to be in the first edition.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Sarah Vaughan would come by, and was nice growing up seeing that end of music that a lot of my friends didn't see. So,
well, Wayne Newton wouldn't have been, in 1957, he wouldn't have been much more than about 10. Of course, that's when you were born. So, yeah, he would have been a young adult at that time, right?
Yeah,
he would come
by the house with his brother. I believe Jerry was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would go over material to find the right keys for him to sing in on the piano. And, he lived right across the street in these homes. Small homes when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it was just a neighbor that lived across the street, you know.
Yeah, and he happened to sing pretty good. And, yeah.
Right.
Darn. That's cool. I don't know. But it's funny. A lot of times people get all gaga over meeting famous folks and talented folks. And
right.
The more that Chris Kern and I do these campfire shows, the more I realize that these talented and, in some cases, famous people are pretty much regular folks like anyone else. It seems. I guess there's a few might be stuffed shirts, but I haven't run into one yet. Not yet.
Well, the ones I've met have been down to earth, you know, just... you know, they know their craft. They do it very well. But off stage, as I saw them, because as a kid I never saw them perform, they were just some other people to know. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably those dancing girls wouldn't have been a good thing to take you to at 6 years old, I suppose, or whatever.
No, not yet.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a good idea. Look at all those feathers. Okay. Well, let me think what else here.
I had a question.
Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Chris, Vegas Chris. No.
Vegas Chris.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're...
Do you have a website, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I do. My website is called chriseganworld.com. I'll spell it. It's chriseganworld.com.
Cool. Yeah. I'm there right now.
God, already?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay. The I'd still be on that one. I'd be doing the dub, dub, dub so far, Chris.
All right.
Well, listen, a few things. You have a song. You sent us about four songs to play, and I thought we'd let people hear. I guess your instrument of choice is guitar?
Yes, I play guitar and really nothing else. I love playing guitar. That was an instrument I picked up when I was around 14 and just grew to love it and still learning how to do it.
Well, I guess you never stop learning those things. It's and I guess for most folks it's kind of fun to just spend an hour a day or 3 hours a day, whatever, just kind of plunking away, coming up with this or that. And for a while, I had, I still have it, a banjo, but I would love to have the time to just sit and try to play it. I was never good. I would sit out on my porch down south and play it, and people would go inside. there was talk of a lynching, but it never happened. But it was fun, you know. It was just something you kind of lost yourself in it. You had to concentrate so hard trying to play that whatever was bugging you soon left. And in a way, it was kind of like noisy meditation.
No, it is It really is meditation. It takes you like the one tune by Dobie Gray, how it, the guitar is his best friend, and I found that to be myself quite often, you know.
Well, I think I can't think of one off the top of my head, but there are some various songs out there where they do talk about the instrument being, you know, their pal or their, like you said, their friend or confidant or whatever. You're right. There are. I can't think of one right now, but there there are.
Even my father, in his older age, he still every day puts his couple hours in on the piano, and that holds him together. It really helps him, and I'm glad he has that. You know,
how old is he now?
He's now 88.
Wow!
And it's hard, but still the music is there. You know, that comes through, and that is still magic for him. Which I'm happy he has that now.
Well, my my wife Sandy knew a fellow named Pine Top Perkins, who was a great blues pianist. And I remember we went somewhere where he was playing, some local gin mill, I guess. He was up playing, kind of a roadhouse kind of place. And he's since passed away, but he had to be about 95 years old, and he was playing the keyboard literally so fast you couldn't see his fingers.
Wow.
He was doing just fine. And again, as old as the hills, but he was a young man playing. That's what you saw, and it was pretty cool. And
yeah, I think... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I will tell you, because this was pretty neat. You'll like this. I just thought of the story. I was watching, you know how you go to these oldie shows, the old rock and roll shows?
Yep.
And a lot of times the doo-wop groups come out, especially some of the original ones. And gosh, the guys are, you know, sometimes 70, 80 years old, older even. And they come out in their suits and they're all, they can't quite do the splits like they used to, you know, back in the day. But they get up there and they do the best they can. And they're always in a spotlight. And I remember watching, I think it may have been... It may have been Earl Lewis and the Channels. So they're all fairly old, very old doo-wop group. And they're up there singing, and the spotlight is on them, and a curtain is behind them. And they are old men on the stage singing, and singing fine. But the lighting, showing the, you know how a spotlight leaves that, like, circle of light, and there's shadows? The shadows on the curtain were the shadows of young men. Somehow the angle of the spotlight, they looked like, you know, they had the wide shoulders, the thin waist like they used to have, and the shadows were bopping along really, really cool. And it made me think that stuff like this, if not music, maybe some other creative process, makes people, I think, adds to your youth quotient.
Yeah, and I respect people that stay with their craft,
mm-hmm.
and not give it up because of their age, and that is remarkable.
Yeah, I for me, I can't imagine just like you or Diane, I can't imagine not doing shows on the radio. But then imagine just like you can't imagine not playing in front of a crowd somewhere or singing.
Yeah,
so that's good. Let's hear one. What one would you like of the four you sent, Chris? Can you read them off?
I believe Ronnie sent Ronnie Ellen sent you Home Street Home, Heaven for a Day,
mm-hmm.
and then a couple Beatle renditions I did.
Okay.
Home Street Home was a tune I wrote a while back, and it is a really hit my heart when I wrote it. And
I think this is the one you put the story in the email?
I believe so.
About the homeless man.
Diane sent the email.
about a homeless man?
Yes. I went to church on a Sunday, and when I was going in the church, I noticed they were escorting out a man with a suitcase. Two people were bringing him out. So when I was done in the church, I went out, and the gentleman was sitting outside on the curb, so I sat next to him and talked to him, and he told me how hard it was to be homeless. And it was sad, so I did what I could do. I got him a room for a few days at a hotel and gave him some money, and that's when I went home, and I was inspired to write this song, Home Street Home, and that's kind of like how this tune germinated.
Well, let's listen to it then, because I thought that was mighty nice of you. Thing to do. Well, here, let's hear it. Again, this is Chris Egan.
Streetwise people, all alone. Can't you see, they don't have a home. You and I, what can we do to help them through? Hunger and pain is part of the game. Look away from the sick and the lame. You and I, what can we do to help them through? There are children out on the street. No money in hand, no food to eat. You and I, what can we do to help them through? Churches and states, all in debate. Preaching the gospel, how does it relate? Do they really see the truth? How about you? Disease is rampant, famine is here, wiping out our souls in the land. You and I, what can we do to help them through? People all alone. Can't you see they don't have a home? You and I, what can we do to help them through? Hunger and pain, part of the game. Look away from the sick and the lame.
Gosh, that ended quick.
Yeah.
Okay. I was kind of just listening to it, and all of a sudden, Chris gave me the high sign. It's coming. He sees the timer, and I don't. And he says, oh, bang, there you go. That's, you know, that actually is very good, and I can see where the experience, what you went through with that poor fella, did inspire you to write that. It's just, that's a very good song and a good message. Far different than some of the stuff you hear, you know, in the pop genre. Just amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't get why the church would have had the guy leave. That doesn't, that's like not the, not the thing to do if you're a church, I would think.
Well, a lot of churches in Vegas now, they lock them up all day long.
Hmm.
So people can't go in and stay in them. And this one was right off of the strip. It actually was a church I went to. Actually, I got my catechism there when I was a kid.
Mm.
And they just lock them up until it's time to go to Mass. And it just hit me weird that a place that should be home for everybody, they're throwing someone out who is in more need than I was, you know.
Yeah. I would think if you were a church, okay, you might be afraid someone goes in and desecrates the altar, throws
right.
a rock through a stained glass window.
Right.
I would almost think you'd want to have someone there just to watch the place, but then let people come in, because, God, in Vegas, you could have someone who's maybe an alcoholic trying to get sober, and he just needs to sit in the pew instead of sitting at a bar stool, and
yeah,
or a
true.
Gambler is quaking because he's, you know, he should be a Gambler's Anonymous, and or someone's just lost someone. Gee, I don't know. Seems to me. Well, again, heaven knows. I suppose someone busts up the church more than once, and they start getting a little cautious. But you're right. I would think someone there. I think of the. I don't know the exact parable, but it was basically I think Jesus saying, you know, as you treat the least, that's how you're treating me. And I try to keep that in mind. I slip sometimes too, but. And you
yep.
get mad at people, but really, the least person, you never know. That might be someone keeping an eye on you too, making sure you're because you know where that person is. You could be there tomorrow.
Yeah, you have to. At least for myself, I try to see myself in other people and them in me. And and you know that when you see someone down and out, that just as easy can be you, and it is you because we're all connected.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I've been down and out. I've been more than down and out sometimes, and it's it's pretty rough to be scratching your head wondering what the heck you're going to do. So
I know.
No, that's great. Now, shortly after that, you met Diane Renee.
Yes, I did.
I'm so real quick. I just figured if she met someone, he would have been a sailor and he jumped ship and flew to her arms. But I guess it was Vegas, huh? Okay. So
yeah,
explain to me what happened.
The way I met Diane, I had a good friend, Tony, who was a mutual friend of both of ours, and he was a keyboard player. And he was actually working on an album with Diane at the time, and he felt we both should meet, and we both had something in common. We might get along good, so he... It was kind of like the matchmaker for us, and it worked out very well. No?
Yeah.
And, that was 1992, 21 years ago.
Wow. So you've been married longer than my wife and me. I think it was 95 for us. And Chris, when did you and Millar get?
2007.
Oh, so you're just mere newlyweds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The isn't it funny how sometimes people can... And, you know, you don't hear too many songs about this where, especially love songs, you think there'd be something where a matchmaker song. I don't know of any that now that I think about it, and there should be buckets of them, but I don't know of any.
Yeah, that is true, because it's kind of a third party that gets you together.
Yeah. Someone got my wife and I together by, I had an antique shop, and they knew Sandy would like antiques and would probably like me. And they got her a gift certificate to my store, and brought her. And she comes marching in with a gift certificate. And well, about 3 years later, we got married.
So you turned a gift certificate into your wife.
Yeah.
Wow, how neat.
And it's funny because a little birdie told me to get the gift certificates. I normally wouldn't. I had them printed up, and this girl who fixed me up with or bought the gift certificate for my wife. Bought the very first gift certificate, and I hardly ever sold any others.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. Anyway, it's funny how things work. So you and Diane pretty much helped each other out, man and wife, and now everything's going great.
Yeah, we've been best of friends most of the time. And
well, there's moments, yeah. You leave the seat up or something, you know, things get...
Yeah.
Yeah, get dicey. Let me think. What do you ever? Does she sing as you play, or?
No, very seldom. I'll play a song, and she might sing along, or she'll come in and actually hear a harmony on a tune that I'll be writing, and hear something I'm not hearing, which is actually really good.
Yeah,
it opens up the door of making the tune better, and that happened actually on the other song I had, Heaven for a Day. We wrote that and went to L.A. and recorded it, and she was hearing this other harmony in her head, and we threw it down on the track, and it actually, it's a part in the tune that works, you know. But getting back to the point, not too much. We don't do music together that much.
But she's out singing a lot, right?
Well, she doesn't sing much anymore.
Oh.
She kind of sings in the shower only, you know.
Oh, well, yeah, you can't do an act like that. I don't imagine that probably wouldn't go over to. Well, in Vegas, heaven knows, I guess. But
yeah, true.
I'm trying to think here. Gosh, I was going to say you probably have every sailor in the United States Navy as competition. That song of hers, Navy Blue, literally is on every jukebox in everywhere the Navy makes a call. It is there. Navy Blue. My God. Now, let me think a minute. You met Diane long after that song had come and pretty much gone, except for it being in the Navy. But do you remember the song as a kid, saying, gee, that's a neat song. Must be a nice girl. And now look at that. You're married.
When I met Diane, I didn't know of the song.
Really?
The day we went out, she brought the record and she played it all day. So, no, I'm only kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say.
No, my brother, who is a few years older than he remembers the tune very well, that I listened to it and I possibly heard it and just didn't remember it. And,
yeah.
I became, to really like the song after hearing it.
I loved hearing how she sang it on a ship.
Yep.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And there's no video on YouTube of that?
On the ship? I don't know.
Probably not.
That would have probably been before there were videos. I mean, there might have been most ships do have a photographer. Probably would have took some pictures anyway. Anyway, that's pretty cool, I thought. Anyway, let's see. Let's listen to that. Oh, before we get to the next song, what's the temperature in Vegas right now?
It's about 85 out right now.
Okay. Yeah. One of our listeners, he says, enough on the campfire show. He says, put on a bonfire.
Wow.
He says, here in Jersey, it's down to 46. Need heat. He says, frost was on the pumpkin this morning, and the windshields, too. Actually, where I live, the windshields were frozen.
Yeah.
And I climbed up on the roof to check my chimney for the wood stove. Yeah, I've been working on cleaning the chimney. I wanted to make sure it was clean enough. And there was ice on the roof. I almost, it almost wasn't a show today. Luckily, I managed to come to a stop before I hit the edge. I'm afraid we're facing winter here.
It was 29 this morning.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, let's listen to that song. Now, what's the name of this one?
Heaven for a Day.
Heaven for a Day. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. What Chris Egan playing it? Let's listen.
Our lives and not be so afraid.
A nice thought.
Like that one.
And a good song. Sounded a little bit like there was like strains that had Beatle, kind of Beatlemania in it, didn't it?
Yeah, it has that Beatle flavor in the, like the cellos and
the horns.
Piccolo trumpets. And I guess some of the Beatle stuff rubbed off on me.
Now, let's say you were only about 6 or 7 years old when the Beatles hit our shores, right?
Yeah, I was. The first time I heard the Beatles, I was about 6. My father was working up in Tahoe, and my older brother Jeff, we had a Wallensack tape recorder, a reel to reel, and we hooked it up to the TV set in the apartment. And we recorded the Ed Sullivan Show and to have the audio end of it. And when I saw them, it was like Christmas for me. It was amazing. They just knocked me out. It was magic.
It's hard to explain to someone who wasn't there. In other words, someone's too young, not born before 60 or born after 64.
Right.
The impact the Beatles had, it was all of a sudden, guys that used to go, hey, yo, what? All of a sudden now it's, hello, love. All of a sudden, right? There were even American musicians would get English accents, grow their hair long. they'd hide out in England and they'd come back as Liverpudlians or there were various groups did that. They were really from Texas, but they're from, all of a sudden now they're Beatle or a Beatle similar to the Beatles. It literally, to this day, I still can't put a finger on what it was about the Beatles. I mean, they sang fine, but there was this fanaticism to it, especially not so much to me in their later days, but when they first hit the. When they first hit the shores, I know it was just love songs, nothing really much more than that. But there was, again, someday I've just got to sit and try to figure out what the heck it was. Because can you, Chris, come up with what the heck? I mean, besides being talented, it was almost like you were part of their club somehow just by watching them.
Yeah, you actually felt like when you watched the Beatles, they were singing right to you, you know, and you were, you know, just, like you said, part of their fan club or...
It was almost like they were part of your fan club.
Right.
Almost. It was like you felt like you could just as well be the Beatles. They made a big thing of saying how they played music since they were 12 or whatever it was.
Right.
Were in skiffle bands, which were like jug bands, only British.
Right.
And they grew up kind of in a rough neighborhood of Liverpool, or at least a middle-class neighborhood. And they had been together all their lives, and now all of a sudden there are these just so enthusiastic four young guys. Again, to this minute, I can't quite figure. I don't think it was anything like it on Earth till they came around.
Yeah, they themselves probably couldn't figure it out either. You know, they were just part of that magic moment, I think it was just meant to be when things happen like that.
Yeah, and I think so too. And they kind of they probably just put everything all together. Like everything was just perfect. Like it was the chemistry. Everything happened just perfect.
I guess you're right. It was like all of a sudden coming up with a creation, and it just started to glow. I suppose. I have no clue.
And going back to the way they used to record, two-track or monophonic or four-track, so primitive, and this goes for other groups too. The music was so good that even the inadequacy of recording equipment, it's still the music had the magic, you know. Where now we have equipment that is so great to record, and there's not that many good songs.
Well, there are good songs, but they're under the surface. That's what we're finding doing this campfire show. Songs that you'll never probably ever hear on the radio, and yet they're fantastic songs, or they're old songs sung fantastically by one person or another.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. It's.
I must say though, there is a difference between a good song and a great song.
Yeah.
And the Beatles, honestly, they wrote a lot of great songs.
They were great.
They weren't just good.
I know when I first heard I Want to Hold Your Hand, I thought my head was going to explode. Literally, I thought my ears were going to fall off. And if the stations didn't play it at least two times a half hour, life wasn't worth living. You just... And in fact, I even remember there was, you know, the Beatles' first album where I think there's... Or one of the first albums. There's their four heads, four heads on the... On the label.
The cover, yeah.
There was another group called the Bugs.
Yeah.
And they did the same pictures. And you thought, well, gee, that must be the Beatles before they were the Bugs. That must be the Beatles before they were the Beatles, I guess. And you bought that, and those guys were awful. If I recall right, they weren't that good. It wasn't the Beatles. And I remember, I have a copy of the Bugs album somewhere. I got to listen to that again and just see. Maybe I was wrong. I was... Again, you got so infatuated with the Beatles. Probably it didn't hurt either that the girls were going berserk for them. Yeah.
To me, it was Christmas. When I heard the Beatles, anytime they're on the radio, I dropped everything and just was like, wow, man, this is great. And I would even sneak a little AM radio in the school with a little earpiece.
Yeah.
Little white earpiece in my ear.
Mm-hmm.
And just wait for Beatle tunes, and it just made me feel good. Whenever I felt down, I would listen to their music and felt better afterwards.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Huh?
It inspired so many people to get involved into music and to write their songs. So in a way, it was a good thing. Came at just the right time.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be, and down the road, that's what they'll think. No?
Yeah, let's hope. I don't think. I wonder sometimes if there'll be another like the Beatles. I
think there have been other bands similar, but not at that level. For instance, we were talking even 2 weeks ago about the band Metallica,
uh-huh.
which was
band. Yeah.
I kind of grew up. I was an early teen, right when they sort of hit the underground, and it was the same thing. It was this phenomenon, and they really have become. I mean. I don't know if there's any band bigger than Metallica. I mean, in that genre.
Yeah.
So it was similar, but it wasn't. It definitely was not to the level of the Beatles at all. Even I can say that, even though I don't know what the Beatles were like.
If you were there, it's something. Honestly, it's like the Dow. You can't put it into words. You cannot do it. I don't think it can even be defined. It was just. All she can say is it was so darn cool, and that's about it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just.
I'm just happy that I grew up actually able to see that and the Stones and all the other great groups and actually be there when it was happening. I went across a website of somebody, some young girl, probably 15, and she left a remark on a Beatle song she was listening to and said she wished she grew up in the times of the Beatles and or Led Zeppelin, you know, and that, you know, that must have been great. And it was. Things were all new and we got to see it for real, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so cool to be there.
Yep.
Yep. Wonderful. Listen, real quick, I wanted to talk about your inventing, too. I understand you're a bit of an inventor.
Yeah, I do invent too, and I've been doing inventing professionally since 1984. I invented some automotive tools and went to a company in Las Vegas who was a small company at the time. They were selling flashlights, and I presented them with about 20 tools that I made. And they put some on the market, and it actually made them a pretty well-known company around the world now with the diagnostic tools.
Okay, so this is for mechanics and stuff that you...
The mechanics and, the actual first, going back to when I was a child, when I was like 3 or 4 years old, electronics just fascinated me. Anything I plugged in the wall or ran on batteries just grabbed my attention. And you know, unless it was a toaster or a heater, it didn't count. But anything that, especially audio equipment and stereos, stuff that could record and capture music, I just thought was so amazing that we lived in a lifetime that we now can capture history and put it on these machines, and never in history since recorded times that we were able. Now I'm living in a life, you know, that we can do that. I just found it so neat. And
You're right. You're right.
It's all Tom Edison. You know, he gave us the record player, the motion picture camera, and
his lab isn't but what about 10 miles from here, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, his original Menlo Park, East Orange.
Yeah.
East Orange Lab. Yeah, where the first movies were done, etc.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to it. It's a pretty cool place.
How neat.
Yeah. They actually have his desk as it was the day he died. He died at his desk.
Wow.
They found him passed away. He was working on a way of turning goldenrod into rubber.
Wow.
And I guess he was just about there and he went.
Didn't he have something carved in his desk? Like a quote, I think?
He might have. I don't know. Mm. I don't know. He was quite the character.
I do have a question about inventions, though.
Yes, go ahead.
If you have, like how did you do it, Chris, when you had ideas, you had some things you had developed, how do you bring it to a company and show them without them just completely stealing the ideas from you?
Yeah.
And saying, thank you, goodbye.
Well, I have had ideas taken from me since being a kid. I would send in the company so that you kind of the best way is when you have a product in your mind is have a journal that has glued in pages and sewn in, and you journalize what your idea is. Say if it's a picture frame where the picture pops out and is held in magnetically or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Put that into a journal and have it notarized and get to know a notary that won't read your stuff. You just really want a date and a time when that was notarized and leave it in the journal before you even show anybody. And I've learned this because I used to blab my ideas to companies and years later they were on the market. And
mm-hmm.
So you journalize your product first, and then if you're capable, make your prototype as close as what you want it to be in production. And then you shop it to companies, and you can get a provisional patent that gives you 1 year of protection before you have to go for a real patent.
Oh, really?
It's called provisional. So it's like a one-year window. You can kind of search the avenues and see if there are doors open that people are interested in your product. And if you do find that, then you want to patent pend your product. And once that's patent pending, once an item's patent pending, you actually have more protection than once the product is patented. Because once it's patented, people know the melody. They know what the tune is, all accord. You know, they now can take it apart and go around and try to circumvent what you've invented. And so when it's patent pending, they can't pull up the files to see what you have pending to be patented.
Oh.
So they kind of wait till the patent issues. So it actually keeps the wolves away for quite a while.
Hmm.
And that patent pending is actually a better stage than patenting, because once it's patented, you'll have attorneys on both sides tearing it apart, saying, look, that's common, that's obvious, things would progress from analog to digital, and, you know, so that progression you can't claim in your patent, or, you know, something like that. And
so it can get pretty hairy.
And patents are... I have a lot of patents, but having a patent doesn't really mean much unless you have the money to back it up if you have someone knock you off,
mm-hmm.
which I found that on a few of my products, and it's kind of like you pay for a patent, and once you patent an item, you would think the patent office would go to fight for you for that patent because you paid them for the patent.
Mm.
You have to hire the attorneys yourself to enforce that patent and declare that patent is yours.
And then right there, a lot of money goes out the window.
A ton of money.
Yeah.
So companies that know I had years ago a backup light that went into a car that used to beep. Just replaced the backup bulb. And I had Nissan, which was Datsun back then, and Isuzu, a lot of Japanese companies, putting it in all of their vehicles, and it actually got stolen through somebody I knew and put it out on the market. And I, at the time, I didn't have the money to go after them, so they actually, you know, ran off with my patent. You know,
boy, I don't know. I'd be ashamed of myself stealing it like that, but I guess people do.
You can't stop, though. It just makes you go on and makes you a little smarter. And like I watch on TV these companies that tell you, call us up and tell us your patent. That's really not the way to do it. Because they want $5,000, $8,000. As soon as you pay them that, they'll never call you back, you know.
Well, it's sort of like these companies that say they'll publish your book, but you got to pay them $5,000, and they print up about $2,000 worth of books.
Right.
And, you know, you're set with, well, you got lots of Christmas gifts for the next 20 years, I suppose. But, gee, that book again. Yeah, but I autographed it this time. Yeah, nice. And you get such a wonderful letter back from them, saying, gosh, I was thrilled, page after page. I was, yeah, they didn't read the book. They just sent you the letter. I have a friend who invented, who has come up with a very good medical device, and he's having the worst time trying to figure out what to do with it. And maybe, well, if you don't mind, maybe I could have him call you. He's a wonderful person and actually served in Iraq, I think, as an MP.
Wow.
And he works as an operating room technician in a coronary unit. No, does heart operations. So with, I guess he's like the surgeon's right hand or some such, or left hand, I don't know.
Right.
And, but he sure could use some advice. And I told him I'd ask you because, he's good people.
I can't talk to him.
Okay. I'll have him get you.
Look at you, Doc, making connections.
Well, the guy's so nice. He was very good to my daughter and her husband when they were down and out. Much like in your song, they stayed at his place with he and his wife, and he does a lot of good things, and this is a chance to maybe make a few bucks and maybe not be under the axe so much either. Plus, I told him if he hits it big, I want him to send me to Disney World for a week. That's all I ask. And
or build you a little quarters out in the backyard. Or something.
Yeah, maybe I could be his gatekeeper and just when people come, I can open the gate and I'll have a spot to live when I'm older.
You'll be doing shows.
Yeah, I'll be doing shows and running the gate. Yeah, I doubt I'll ever stop doing shows. Chris, I'll email you his information and him you and all that. So, tell you off the air more of the guy's name and everything.
Right.
How about what I like about inventing and anyone that does like you've written songs. My son is a composer too, out in Los Angeles, and a musician, and he says a lot of times, like you just said, that he has had friends who have written songs for like a commercial or something, and they wind up not getting paid because they took like five notes out of the song and said, well, it's not your song.
Yeah, or they won't play the eight bars or whatever the limit is. They invert the melody enough to where it's that song, but it's enough to get around it.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised it goes on. I don't know what can be done unless the laws get tighter on it. But how much of a melody can you claim?
Yeah. Well, you do. You notice on a lot of these radio shows on regular radio, they'll play up to 30 seconds of a song, and I think you don't have to pay ASCAP BMI if it stays under 30 seconds. I believe that's the case. Mm-hmm. So, do you have any advice for inventors?
Well, my advice to inventors would be, first of all, when you get real enthusiastic of your product, when you want to talk to somebody, talk to yourself. Don't tell everybody else what it is, because when you tell somebody, they might just tell somebody else because, they heard something they like, and it can work against you. And have a journal, immediately get a journal so you can journalize your ideas, put them in the journal, have them notarized. Once they're notarized, make a prototype, search out companies that possibly, unless you're going to make it yourself, would be interested in looking and setting up a audition with them to demonstrate your product. At least that's how it worked with myself. And I made my prototypes. I went in front of Mac Tools and Snap-on and Honda and showed what I made. And that's kind of like how the tools took off.
I'll be darned. Okay, so you got to be sort of your own salesman, too. I guess the one thing I kind of like is your being an inventor and a composer and a singer and all that. It all kind of fits in. I mean, the Beatles, in a way, were inventors. You've taken some life experience and turned out, well, two very good songs. You had, someone would have told the Beatles, and hopefully obviously they didn't listen, you guys will never be famous. It can't be done. And inventors take it can't be done and turn it into, well, I did it. You know? And that's pretty cool. Yeah. Hey, listen, we want to play one of your guitar songs. Your wife emailed and said, "Be sure I play one of your one of your guitar instrumentals."
By the way,
I don't know which ones you have. Do you have "Can't Buy Me Love"?
I think so. And what's the other one?
Or "Lady Madonna"?
Those two.
"Lady Madonna" would be good.
Okay, we'll put that on. "Lady Madonna" it is, and this is Chris Egan at the guitar.
And by the way, I just read on Facebook, I think, I think it's a Japanese, what do they call that? Not a famous quote, but a
proverb?
Proverb, thank you.
Motto?
It said, the person who says it can't be done should not interrupt the person who's doing it.
Ooh. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, very good.
That's cool. All right.
Well, here, let's listen. Here's Chris Egan. We got time to go over a little, so let's not worry. Here we go.
Great.
I'm just waiting for that.
Yeah,
the last little squiggle on the note there. Well, that sounded just fine.
Nice.
Thank you.
Did you ever see the Beatles?
No, the closest I got to see the Beatles was back in the mid-90s. I saw Paul McCartney with his last group. He had Wings.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. He pulled it off. And, and then I saw Ringo, about 4 years ago with his all-star band in Vegas. And it's amazing how one person of the band still can pull the magic in, you know. It's like,
yeah, they had something going. I don't know. They somehow or another got some payback karma, I think. They must have done something really nice about 200 years ago. I don't know what, but something.
No, I thank God that the Beatles are in my life. Have you ever seen the video when Paul McCartney was in Russia?
Oh, when he did Birthday?
He did the concert in Russia.
Yes.
And unbelievable. It just how the Russian people loved him. And
they went berserk. Yeah.
How you know they those are the true fans. They put their life on the line to buy these Beatle records black market, you know.
Oh yeah, you back then, sure, you could have been in trouble snagging a Beatle record. The drummer was a heavy set, bald headed guy.
Right.
If I recall right. And they did that song Birthday.
Uh-huh.
That ran na 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 your birthday thing and
right.
The crowd and that drummer was breaking the drums. I mean, he was rolling and
yep.
The fans again, there must have been 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people
yep.
in this field or square or whatever. And they were going I don't know when I saw a song be more powerful. That you're right, that was very, very good.
Yeah, I watched the video a couple weeks ago with Diane. I've had it for quite a couple years, and it just knocked me out how they actually took down, they said, the Soviet Union, the Beatles.
Yeah, they did that day.
I mean, and
made
the young people want to be
Beatles.
Yeah, to have what we have in America, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be free and listen to what we want to hear.
What year was that?
Oh,
2003?
It
yeah.
had to be about then, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, I was just going to say, I found that Bobby Caldwell thing, if you want to, you should take Renee. Bobby's actually lives about a mile from me when he's home.
Wow.
He was a guest on the show. We have him as a podcast on our show, as we will be doing with your show. February 15th and 16th at Chrome Showroom Santa Fe Station, wherever that is. I guess it's near the railroad tracks.
No, it's a couple miles from actually my house. No.
Well, you should walk over. It's evidently Bobby Caldwell's R&B show. If you
right.
go up there and say you know me, he'll know who you're talking about.
Excellent. No,
yeah.
I always loved his music.
Very nice person. Again, I've seen him actually perform just to help someone out who's, you know, in a little store starting up a dog grooming thing.
Wow.
He goes over and sings for them. And yet he'll probably, I'm sure, he'll sell out the...
pack the house.
Yeah, the pack the house at this other place. Good guy. Well, let's see. And you sound like you're a similar person. Very good fella. And your wife, heaven knows, she's an angel. You gotta keep her there.
No, I agree. No.
Yes.
And well, can I give a plug?
Sure, please.
My music.
Yep.
The Beatle guitar tracks. If you go on the Amazon, iTunes, or CD Baby, if you put in my name, Chris Chris Egan, Eagan, it'll pop up when you're looking at MP3 downloads, Beatle guitar tracks, My Way, and then there's like 32 different ones to choose from. And then in about another 3 weeks, my other songs that are videos on YouTube are all going to be able to be downloaded to Heaven for a Day and Home Street Home and some other tunes. So, if I have any fans out there, they can come try to hunt me down.
Okay, great.
Nice.
And this will, like I said, this will be a podcast for, you know, in a, I'd say within a week or so.
Excellent.
And I'll let you know. I'll email Diane. What's the other thing? Gosh. Again, I commend you for helping that fella who was down and out. Did you ever hear what happened to him?
No, I never followed up. I just figure when you do that, I've noticed in my life when I help people out, it actually helps yourself.
Oh, yes.
You're a better person for it, and you're not really supposed to look back. You know. I say I did help them out, but it's, you know, it's something you just go forward and help the next person, and.
One
day that can be me sitting there or someone I know. It's just, I think it's a world we live in. We have to help each other out and try our best to.
I like that. And that's exactly myself. I know many times been really, actually the short cure for me for an awful depression was joining a rescue squad. If you feel you got it bad, just wait for the phone to ring, and you're heading out somewhere where someone's doing way worse than you. And,
that is true.
And you're there helping, and oddly enough, it makes you feel better. It sounds sounds crazy, but it does.
Yeah, that is right. Mm-hmm. That is true.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I think we better boogie along.
Thanks, Chris.
And, thank you so much. I'm so honored to speak with you. Your wife, too. Gosh, Diane was just always a thrill to listen to, and I'd never in a million years thought I'd ever get to talk to her, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
It's really something. And so I don't know if I'll ever get to Vegas. It'd probably be just as well I don't. I would certainly try to look you up.
I appreciate it, and I thank both you, Doc, and Chris for letting me have the time to talk about who I am.
Yep, well, we're honored. Thank you so much. Listen, stay on the line real quick when we're done. We're just going to say good night now, and I'll be with you right after the show. Friends, that's a wrap. That was Chris Egan, and we had a wonderful, I think, interview, huh, Chris?
Awesome. Loved it.
Yeah.
Good show.
Listen, friends, till we meet again, do treat each other kindly. God bless you. God bless America. And if you would, please say a prayer for our soldiers and their families, and one for each other. Come on. We'll see you later. Thank you. Thanks, Chris.